This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today is the second episode of our mini-series on pandemic preparedness, where the idea of this mini-series is to look at how the kinds of strategies, behaviors, and practices that we need in order to be prepared to cope with the pandemic in this new year, what we've learned from last year, and also how to live with COVID-19 in the coming near future. And today we'll be looking at a long-term plan to survive COVID-19 with the current number of new cases easily breaking record highs almost on a daily basis. Are our current strategies sufficient to flatten this current wave? What would a long-term plan to survive this pandemic, while at the same time balancing the economic well-being, the livelihoods of Malaysians, what would this long-term plan look like? That's what we'll be discussing today, and I'm so privileged to have in the studio with me Datuk Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. How are you today, Datuk Sri?
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you for having me here. BFM.
Happy New Year, Datuk Sri.
It's still not too late.
It is not too late to wish.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about what the new year looks like, considering everything we went through last year?
1st of January is another day after 31st of December.
Very pragmatic.
So we are actually into that same, more or less same trajectory. And barring, something really, game changes in many respects and aspect of our life, it would otherwise be
just another day.
Just another day and another year. Mm-hmm. And with all these crises at hand, I must not be so pessimistic, but there's a lot for us to do, and we hopefully be a bit more productive and fulfilling year for all of us.
All right. And what we hope to do is to get some insights from you also about what we can learn from Selangor's situation, mm-hmm. where the cases have been the highest in this state for the longest time. So our lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio if you have any questions or you'd like to share any thoughts. Datuk Sri, how long do you think we have to continue living with COVID-19?
Oh my God, that would be a question that is anybody's guess.
That's right.
But of course, the more informed one will have a better guess. But I've been saying this from the word go when I was in MOH still, and I said it and I'm going to repeat it today. That's going to be a long haul. Although my time, it was a containment stage.
The early days.
But as soon as the mitigation stage, was triggered, and that was about the time I left MOH. Mm-hmm. But even back then, I have already said that, and I've said that in the STFC, in our, Task Force Selangor, COVID, we have time and time reminded state government that this is going to be a long haul. And that for that, we have got to have just not to handle it acute or short term, but as well a middle term and long term strategy. Sure. Fighting virus, SARS-CoV-2 is like fighting a war. You must have a strategy to win the war.
Yes. And what would this long term strategy look like? Is something that we're going to sort of break down. It's not an easy answer.
No, not at all.
It's not straightforward as
not
well.
Not at all. But, as you can see, all those, OECDs, very advanced countries are all on their knees.
That's right.
And the bigger they are, the harder they fall, as you can see. So even jurisdictions like Vietnam, Thailand are doing relatively better.
Well, yes.
So that is all a reflection of the preparedness of public health preparedness. It's a proxy indicator of that, actually.
Do we currently have a long-term strategy? Have we seen anything like that coming out from our authorities?
That's going to be a difficult question because I can't represent the authority. Mm. But from all that we are now observing and witnessing, we are still in a way, I must say, arguably and admittedly groping, although we have very clear public health intervention strategy of those that we are all well informed of. But insofar as managing wave, you know, all those SOPs, we are more than, you know, informed. But as to managing waves, first, second, and now the uncontrolled third escalating cases in the third wave, that's where I think we more or less fumble, and our early successes were almost like ruined and drowned by this third wave.
I mean, I understand that when you say that, you know, you can't speak on behalf of the authorities, but at the same time, we know, even for you and me, members of the public, anybody living in Malaysia needs to have that level of transparency.
Right. And this is why I would be more than glad to share our thoughts from SDFC's perspective. And I've got to be calling a spade. I'm going to not mince my word over, you know, failures or things that much to be desired. And that's where we're going to discuss this. I think everyone is still learning. And it's going to be a painful process. But for as long as we are willing to learn and unlearn and relearn quickly and share and listen and to one another, I think we will be there. We will be able to at least bend and flatten the curve every time you see an outbreak of this proportion.
So let's look at the immediate, sort of shorter term first in order to battle the numbers that we're seeing right now. In the past week, there have been rumours of a full movement control order being reinstated. And of course, we're still waiting. We're waiting for the Prime Minister's announcement, which is scheduled for 6 p.m. this evening. What are some of the immediate measures that you feel are needed now to get this outbreak under control?
Right. It's always very easy to have a kind of a crude and blunt a lockdown, as it's going to be like, you know, overwhelmingly like, you know, putting in place and controlling the outbreak. But it's always a case of not so much of the issue of lockdown, but at what cost and for how long? And what are the measures? And what the objective in achieving that? You know, you must have very clear-cut, categorically spelled out of what you really want to achieve. Otherwise, it's going to be unending, and you know, you can always, what is it? So these are the issues that the government has got to be very clear and forthright with us, because, you know, it is certainly, I don't have to, you know, spell out over the untold miseries of the economic impact, livelihood, you know, mental health, violent, domestic violence, and, you know, suicidal tendencies and whatever. So it must be clearly spelled out. What exactly do you want to achieve? How do you want to achieve it? And what is it that you go by the metrics or the indices of success, where you just did you then lift up that whatever measures of lockdown.
So Selangor, KL and Sabah have been under the CMCO since the middle of October, and we still are. What has been the impact of the CMCO? And along with it, we have seen some seemingly ad hoc changes in SOPs, some being lifted and relaxed, you know?
Yeah, that's where you can't help, you know, observing and witnessing those that you really cannot take and cannot brain, you know, for example, those measures like, you know, once upon a time it's two in a car, and then you're allowed three, four. Although they come from the same household, though. And, you know, there's the lack of science, the rational, and aspect of risk management. And you know, those are the principles that are the lack of wisdom or more of the wisdom or the more the lack of it that people are questioning. So I must say that I would want to go in detail over that discussion. So, perhaps I can go into it slightly later, or you want to me to pursue?
I'll just very quickly point out among the changes in the SOPs that. And the number of people to a car was one of them.
Yeah.
The interstate travel was another big one that I think...
Perhaps I would want to answer your question slightly from a different perspective, though. When we had that lockdown, be it the conditional or, you know, those time from 18 of what, March?
March.
I would have thought that the emphasis then was to actually... galvanize and fortify our public health, should I say, tools and measures and capabilities, rather than looking at it from a hospital-based, you know, patient care per se. Okay, that get that too very clear. I'm not against, you know, buying of ventilators or whatever, but more importantly was the absence of a protracted very strategized in a more strategic way of enhancing, if I may say, you know, personnel, for example, doing contact tracing, right? That's one. Secondly, over going beyond, you know, we have my Sejahtera, we in SDFC had Sri Lanka a lot earlier, but then when you come to realize that what percentage of those data has been used for contact tracing, you realize that, oh, why is it as low as, you know, once the answer was given in the parliament at 4% and then
from
slightly.
The MySejahtera.
That's right. So you have all those like the automation, you know, that thing that would have, you know, helped us a lot by way of doing the what is known as the tracing, the testing, the isolating, and as well from those early days to have identified a particular testing of the RTKAG. It was used in Sabah, though, but there was no immediate admission that to have a faster turnaround time of testing, you have just got to go with RTKAG. Because you're not really doing a clinical diagnosis here. You are attempting at isolating the potential asymptomatic of carriers. And you really need that rather than, you know, there was once upon a time PCR samples in Sabah sent to West Malaysia. So all this to me was quite a failure of sort, you know, and that allows for community spreading. I can go into detail of the mechanics of moment to moment, how it finally get to us losing, you know, the ability to control this third wave. And then, of course, you know, I can go into that later. But this was what I thought. Beyond just those, sorry if I may use the word, nonsensical kind of changes of you know, from 2 to 3 in a car, whatever. So I couldn't put that aside. But the more major failures, would I say, was the inability to adapt and to mitigate and using tools that are more pertinent and commensurate to the third wave, you know, because we were, in a way, we was complacent in a way, because you remember those predictions by Imperial College, Mount Modelling and the MIR, and now we have another one, ILHM, you know, all those are WHO certified kind of modelling. We did not see those numbers. We thought that we were already in control.
That's right.
And then suddenly, because of this, and you're allowing for the interstate traveling, particularly from Sabah to Semenanjung and West Malaysia, and when you don't have those tools in place, you see those. You see all those outbreaks from what I call as the high risk setting. You know, when those positive, you know, went into positive cases, went into those high-risk setting of, be they, you know, dormitory workers, foreign workers particularly, of manufacturing, and as well, the, you know, you have the construction sites, the factories and whatnot. So you have those high-risk setting in place, and you have these people who were somehow, you know, because of this as well, flip-flopping in quarantine or not, you know, coming back from Sabah to Semenanjung. So all those you know, the dynamic or the interplay of all these dynamics have resulted in a situation where the third wave wasn't controlled and much to our desire, because, as I said, there should be strengthening of the public health intervention tools. We did not do that. And then, you know, all this was as a result of that. I don't quite mind those little things of whatever, you know, those measures.
Details.
Yeah, the small details. But is the big thing on the strategic approach of public health intervention, you know, that was really missing. And we lost those times, the precious time, because we must understand that when we have lockdown, it was meant not to ban this curve or flatten it, but more importantly is to get us strengthened further with all those tools.
Yeah.
And those tools like, you know, data analytics, not just data analytics, but those apps, you know, that we should mine those data, do data mining to understand even after the clusters, then there will be the spills over to the community. All those would have to be, you know, that's, I will come to it later.
Okay. Oh,
those are the approaches that we have got to put in place.
Yeah. Well, very quickly, Dr. Sri, I want to ask you, is it too late now?
It's nothing like too late. But the only thing is that we have suffered. We are now hugely, we're going to go 200,000 threshold, that breakthrough number of 200,000 cases soon, in March perhaps. And we have long passed the epicenter of it, of China. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, 500 over death. And to some extent, you know, our facilities are overburdened. But there's always this issue of, you know, people's perspective, whatever. But I think I'll just leave it at that first.
All right. So we'll come back after the break and go into the details. I definitely want to find out more from you about what needs to be done to strengthen these public health tools, the use of data and technology, including the apps that we already have to make our contact tracing more efficient and automated. I'm speaking to Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. We're talking about long-term strategies for the pandemic. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Joining me today, Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. It's the second part of our mini-series on pandemic preparedness. And today we're looking at what are the long-term strategies we need to survive COVID-19, to live with COVID-19. But really, we need to be talking about what we should learn from the last year, which a lot of it, Dato' Sri has already mentioned, we missed the forest for the trees. We were very focused on a certain part of the problem.
Yeah.
We were very focused on a certain part of the problem, which left huge gaps in other areas. And notably, Dato' Sri, you've mentioned that the gaps in public health capabilities now, the contact tracing, testing, targeted testing is another big issue that we are grappling with. And I'd like to get you to talk a little bit more about what we need to ramp up now. If you have any thoughts or questions you'd like to share with us, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Dato' Sri, just I think you kind of went into it very broadly about the time when we had various iterations of the lockdowns. We should have been using that time, that opportunity, mm-hmm. to galvanize public health tools and capabilities. So what exactly does this mean? Contact tracing is one of them. So perhaps you want to start with that.
Right. Okay. What's really taken aback when we inquired and found out that to a large extent, contact tracing is at best semi, what is the right word? Yeah. It's still manually. They've got to call and, you know, they've got to call to those when they were doing their contact tracing. For what you should by now, you know, leverage on is the capability of your mice jatra or the selangka. They will allow you to, you know, immediately do a contact tracing faster, and in so doing, you'll got to have to isolate them, you know, even
earlier.
And more importantly as well, beside this, is the usage of RTKAG, which we called 4 months ago. And there was a bit of right now, of course, it is already, you know, been used. But then a lot earlier, we thought that that was the way forward for us to really get. So we have this strategy, and it is a WHO strategy, not an STFC strategy, of what we call as the TTIS, the Trace, Test, Isolate, and Support. Mm-hmm. So this was what it should have been, you know, the case where at the third wave outbreak, as you, you know, get to seeing the community spread beyond just clusters, there were already spillovers to the parameter communities, mm-hmm. and as well the unlinked sporadic cases, you know, almost like at one point, almost like 50-50%, you know, 50-50, you know, almost like half was. So there was already community spread. And the way for us to manage that, to contain or mitigate that rather, is for us to do all this, using all these tools. And that's hence the reason why STFC came with this community testing. Mm-hmm. And we know very well that we do, you know, using data analytics, we do AI, we could actually zoom into areas. And you should know that when we do this, we've got to really find out over what is called the positivity rate. Of the 1,000 that you do, you know, you should not go beyond having 50 positive cases. So if you have, you know, if you have 100, that is certainly 10%. So WHO's benchmark is for positivity rate to be not more than 5%. Mm-hmm. And I must tell you, in our numerous community screening, we found out that, you know, where those that we say that it's going to be less than 1%, yes, sometimes it's 0%. We know because there's, you know, although there are possibility of any community or sporadic cases there, but because, you know, you already predict it that way, sometimes you find none. But then there are as high as 20, 29%, 30% over. So this is where we thought that if there's a way for us, you know, to preemptively, proactively get to, you know, zoom into it and then quickly isolate them. And now we are using the RTKAG because, you know, insofar as the infectious period, it is sufficient for RTKAG to identify and to detect that.
Whether somebody has a high viral load, am I right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So pre-infectious period, of course, it's also infect, but then it may not be detected because you've got only about 95% sensitivity. But the PCR would have, it's too sensitive. You have dead viruses, debris, protein, right, that is still detected by PCR. So you, in that sense, it is more pertinent in terms of turnaround time. It's being cheap. And more importantly, you get to isolate those you found positive. So that's the way we should go forward. So because of that, we have a strategy called community screening. And more importantly, we now have just called for one. Last week, we had the Exco of Health, Dr. Siti Maria, calling for a kind of a discourse, or a, not a discourse, it was a presentation period for STFC, mm-hmm. to present our, what we call as the prevention outbreak on ignition sites, the POIS thing, POIS, which is meant as a tripartite effort of government, state government, stakeholders, the employers, and as well using, you know, NGOs like Imarit and others helping us to do, and CellCare particularly, to do, you know, screening and testing. So in that sense, these are the two approaches that we thought It is, I must say, it is voluntary.
Mm.
Nothing really, you know, legislative or punitive about it, because factories, owners and stakeholders, they must understand that this is an investment for them. If they get to identify quickly, they will have a way to ensure that their factories will not be locked down or, for, you know, whatever. So this is the way, and we are more than willing to share and learn from others, other states as well. But we thought that this was what is necessary, because, you know, going forward, as I said, virus is still in the community, and there is this thing called, if I would want to, you know, there is this thing called super spreaders event and individuals,
yep,
more than just the RO, yes, R-naught, whatever. I may want to talk about that later on. But we understand, based on all these signs, we came up with this approaches.
Okay. And Selangor has been doing some of these mass screening exercises,
mm-hmm,
in certain, I suppose, more high activity areas. Is that an example of how the POIS program would play out?
Yeah. This is what we are now doing. Last week, we had the SMEs, without mentioning. There are now about 12,000 of them, you know, buying in, and they are more than, you know, willing to get on board with us. And we have tested that in settings, real test settings. And true enough, we have found a spillover effect of big clusters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do this proactively, then we have a way to, in fact, mitigate before outbreak. That will be, mm-hmm, that will be the way to do it.
Okay.
So, yeah, we have talked to a number of manufacturers. I don't have to name them, because you know, they feel that, you know, they like this, because they is a way for them to, you know, come on board to do this for their own for their own sake, for,
yeah,
their own, for their
for
own
their
industry,
staff's,
yeah,
well-being,
for their staff, yeah,
yeah,
that, exactly,
and the continuity of business as well.
Yeah.
Dr. Zul, Arvinda has a question on WhatsApp. What do you think about the turnover of testing currently? And the second part of his question is the importance of setting up task forces in every state, such as Selangor.
Right. Yeah, Dr. Arvinda is one of the most keen, you know, medical officer who are very keen on this, and I would say, I would outrightly say that, you know, state government, like the federal government, we by way of federal constitution, we health is on a concurrent list. State government must assume responsibilities and complement and supplement work of the federal government, and I think all the more that state government should have task force, and I'm sure they have talents and they are, you know, keen, you know, practitioners and researchers there, like him. He's a researcher, clinical researcher. So I would really strongly, you know, propose and advocate for that.
Mm.
And over the testing, I'm not really sure that over the backlog of testing, whatnot. But I'm very sure that with RTKAG done in less than half an hour, you know, we use Sri Lanka. Well before they came in, they already registered. So the turnaround time of all this is less than an hour. You can do a lot, you know, because they are already, you know, we have used all the apps, mm-hmm, and technology to make sure that, mm, we do it fast.
So we wouldn't want at the federal level for them to have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to using mm-hmm, the technology. Are we saying that Sri Lanka could complement MySejahtera, or for MySejahtera to be revamped?
Well, truth be told, we came out with Sri Lanka a month earlier than MySejahtera. No qualms about that. No, nothing to brag about, whatever. But we have always been along the line of synergy and you know, working together. Because beyond contact tracing, by the way, we leverage Sri Lanka more than just, you know, doing contact tracing. We could also do, you know, in the quarantine time, when, you know, home quarantine, whatever, we can always get them to, you know, update their health conditions and whatever, symptoms and whatnot through Sri Lanka, and then there's a way for them to communicate. And we also, Sri Lanka does a lot of, you know, surveys and whatnot, and there's a way we communicate on that platform. So, you know, all the more that we must complement and work together on this. And then, of course, that will really demand, or that will really require as a prerequisite, data sharing.
And, you know, I think it was back in October, the Selangor Task Force said that the Ministry of Health was no longer sharing granular data on COVID-19 with the state. So are we seeing, you know, steps backwards in the transparency, the sharing of the data?
Okay, that's been an issue that we have gone through we find difficulties in getting cooperation on that, but the MOH understand that what we are asking for, that granular data, is nothing to do with what is called as the personalized or personality identifiable data, IPD, of individuals. It's nothing like that at all. So that is, of course, safeguarded. But what we are asking for are just, you know, a kind of a granular data which is anonymous. It's a kind of a case line listing information on plays and, you know, occurrences. And all those are very epidemiological, non-identifiable with any person per se. So, you know, this is our concern to have, you know, because our concern is to identify the location of clusters within a district, and we want to act fast. We want to, you know, those are the things that we are looking for. So hence the reason why when we do not have this, we are actually, so to say, mitigating the crisis in the dark when the data pipeline sharing between federal and state cannot be resumed.
Mm. So is Sri Lanka able to make up for those gaps in data currently?
We can't unless we are aided by, you know, PKDs and the state at the state level or district level. We do sometimes have, you know, sharing of that. But honestly, we would have thought that this would be the way forward, you know, mutually sharing this so that it is... in the final analysis, for the good of the state and the federal government.
So despite the strategies that the task force has envisioned, you can't really move ahead very much if you're still blocked in terms of data.
Surely. No, we can't. And we are quite well aware why, you know, we need this. And as I've said, this nothing doing with personalized, personality identifiable data of patients, you know. And And if there was a case of explanation, a rationale given to us that we could have misinterpreted all these data, mind you, I'm so privileged to have, you know, very top-notch clinicians, infectious disease clinicians, and as well epidemiologists and public health physicians and data scientists. And what I'm saying is, you know, with this imminent, you know, members of the SDFC, you know, we'll be very careful with managing data, and we don't really communicate this. All that we have communicated are all those that are given by MOH, though.
All right. Let's go for a quick break. I'm speaking to Dato Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. We're discussing long-term strategies for COVID-19. Call us if you have any questions. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back after the market update. Just to very quickly look at, you know, things like, again, when we're talking about data, we hear so much about the reproductive rate. But does that adequately paint us the whole picture of controlling the transmission? So we'll come back and find out more about that right here on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Shao Ik, and on the show with me today, Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of Selangor Task Force on COVID-19. We've had a very interesting discussion so far about long-term strategies to continue to cope with the pandemic, to live with the pandemic, to have an exit strategy for the current cycles of movement control orders that we've been going through. And of course, we're waiting for Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin to make his announcement on what comes next. And his announcement is scheduled for 6 o'clock this evening. So we'll be streaming that here on BFM when it does happen. But for now, my question for you, Dr. Zul. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about, you talked so much about using data, analyzing data, transparency of everything that has been collected, and perhaps, whether we're looking at the right kind of data or not. One thing that has been cited very frequently is the reproductive rate, the R0 rate. Now, how do we use something like this in the long-term strategy that you talked about earlier, or is it actually not sufficient?
Right. That is a very pertinent question because this pandemic, COVID-19, has introduced to us, terminologies and jargon. And among one that is oft repeated is the R0 and RT, which is essentially about the numbers that represent number of people an infected person goes to infect others, and larger than one, numbers would be that shows it is increasing. You got to bring it down to below one, but I must say, with all due respect, beyond just R0, there is a thing now among epidemiologists, and it's getting more attention right now. Because the R0 somehow assumes and presupposes that that number is almost like there is no variability.
Mm-hmm. It behaves the same way for every
exactly.
person.
Exactly. And you know very well that is not true. Mm-hmm. Because these are modeling, that came up with all this epidemiologists coming up with. But honestly, the parameter that we should be looking at, more importantly, out of this as well, these are the process of learning, is what is known as the dispersion numbers, mm-hmm. K, and not...
Oh, another letter.
Yeah. K represent that index of dispersion numbers, which is quite which the lower the number is, the lower the number is, the more super spreading phenomena will take place.
Okay.
If I give you an example, if a number like 0.1%, it means that 70% of those infected will not be infecting others.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a Pareto's law where 20% will infect 80%.
Okay.
Yeah. And dispersion numbers, dispersion parameters, K, is more important for us to understand. In a nutshell, if I may just put it simply put, it will be the phenomena of super spreading events and super spreading individuals. R0 talks about as if that infectivity is
standard
and across the board,
mm-hmm.
but it is K numbers, the K parameters that will really make you identify super spreaders individuals,
mm-hmm.
that you got to look for. And in fact, there are many of those infected, they are not going to infect others anyway. That's why I say the lower the numbers, the more of the infected person a person will not be infecting others.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a way to handle super spreading, and this is why it's so important, because it's got practical implication of understanding super spreading events and those super spreading individuals. You know, I don't have to, you know, get the examples of one person infecting others, mm-hmm. you know, in South Korea, the case of thousands, you know. So these are the things that has, to me, more implication on practical intervention, you know, public health intervention kind of approach, because they're just talking about R naught, you've got to keep it down. It's more descriptive to me. But with K, it has got a practical, strategic meaning and implication. So you got to understand super-spreading events and super-spreading individuals that are going to all these events, and he becomes the super-spreader. And in the light of setting like factories and whatnot, super-spreader individuals are the one that will cut across the bubbles, the internal bubbles of this. You will go into determine, you understand our poise. That's where we got to really restrain them. And if we get to understand who are the potential risk individuals, then that's the way to avoid super spreader events and restrain super spreaders, super spreader individuals.
Yeah, but what do you do when you have a K number that helps you to identify super spreading?
Right, this is of course data and analytics. So the more data you have, big data that you have, then you can really come down to understanding what is happening. So you know, and that would allow you to intervene. So when you get to do that, to understand that, then you will have to restrain super spreader events. The case example, epitome of it is of course Sabah election, state election, you know. So that is a super spreader event, and you know, many other settings. But just to give an example, so with that, we don't have to lock down or bluntly or crudely, you know, across the board in a blanket way. We would have to strategize and understanding who are the potential super spreaders and their super spreading events that they are out to do, whether, you know, gathering of people, whatever. I don't have to, you know, many of those kind of social. That's why they call it social distancing, I thought. It was not like physical distancing, because those are the social events, you know, that bring about and trigger those super spreaders events and super spreading individuals infecting and others can get contracted from them. So this is why it's so important. So this is more important than R naught and RT.
Okay.
is the key parameters, K number.
To your knowledge, are we looking at the K number currently?
Not really. Unfortunately, we have not been given. We have not been giving enough attention to dispersion numbers, and all the more now that we have realized. And it's not, as I've said, we are still learning, and those are the things that we have got to learn, because it's not just academic. It's not academic per se. It has got practical implication of intervention strategies to understand how we can, you know, restrain or mitigate outbreak like this.
I want to very quickly touch on the vaccine, because everybody is looking ahead to the vaccine. Well, the first batch from the Pfizer vaccine is arriving in February. It is expected, because NPRA has given conditional approval, it is expected that we can see vaccinations beginning quite shortly after. Dr. Zhou, what role can state governments play when the vaccine is here in terms of its distribution?
Well, you should understand that these state health departments, you know, and right down to the PKDs at the district level and whatnot. Insofar as those are part of the MOH hierarchy, right? From, you know, MOH to state to PKDs, you know, what do you call the pejabat
daerah,
kesihatan daerah, and pegawai kesihatan daerah. But beyond that, where we as a state government, no, that's just not slang, I think we must also, and SDFC as SDFC proposes to the Chief Minister, MB of slang, that we should also procure vaccine, you know, because rather than relying on the federal government, because if we have the capacity, we should also, because we must take proactive measures and action to safeguard our the thing that I've told you about, like the POIS program, and as well our frontliners, certainly, our frontliners beyond just the ACW, the healthcare workers, also others. So, whether they are whatever other, portfolios there are. So you get to also understand there are potential outbreak in among even foreign workers and setting of this, that can really, jeopardize our industries in Selangor. So all the more if we can, somehow relate to stakeholders so that we provide them at cost, whatever, so they get to do it fast. You must understand that although it's in February, by the time they get to, we do not know in terms of, hierarchy of needs and priority, they will be among the last to be able to be immunized or vaccinated. So we must have the capability to, to conduct our own kind of vaccination. And there are a few, who came around to talk to us. And the chief minister is quite open to this. And I thought it would be pertinent not to just rely on the federal government, because taking like what is latest that the minister of health just make mention that they have increased their doses to 12. Almost like 12.8 million, right?
Additional 12.2 million doses, if
exactly.
I'm not mistaken.
12.8 doses. And that will only come about to only about 6.4 million population. And you must know the kind of priority, frontliners, those over 65 and those with, whatever NCDs and underlying diseases. So that is only about 20%. So we may not, we just wait and hope that that's the reason why I think the state government should take initiatives to even procure and get our kind of vaccination program on.
Does Selangor state government already have plans in the works to procure?
I would allow chief minister to announce himself. It is his prerogative.
Okay, so we're not going to hear it from
him. We are only a think tanking group. But now we have, beside that think tanking group, I must take the opportunity announce and talk about what is known as now as the STFO. The STFO is the Selangor Task Force operation, and they are the execution arm of STFC.
Okay.
So we just, rather than just be talking about ideas and program, we now have a way to get down on ground zero. To have and mind you, over the vaccination as well, we could very well use our network of cell care and cell care, particularly our clinics and our GPs and our doctors.
Correct.
To get this executed, and that would be a proactive.
Correct. Because I'm definitely thinking that at this operational level, you have a vast network of GP clinics.
Yeah.
You have employers, organizations with huge numbers of employees that could feed
right.
into the mechanics.
You are right. That's a correct observation. And we must defend and protect our industries, because Selangor, contribution to the federal government GDP is, cannot be compromised. And this reason why we thought that we must take a proactive step to procure vaccines.
All right. Can I get a final message from you, Dr. Zhou, when we're talking about a long-term strategy?
Mm-hmm. Right. I've dwelled on for whatever time that were available earlier. And I think we have done quite successfully in our first and second wave. We have fumbled on the third wave, which is now ongoing. And, I think no blaming game, no finger pointing, whatever. But all the more that we should galvanize the strength and the effort of MOH, and as well, state government, just not Selangor, it's Penang, it's Sarawak, it's, Malacca and others, and all the more, this is the approach advocated by WHO in terms of the whole of government approach, both federal and state government, and more importantly now in the state of Selangor, we are now advocating, not just advocating, we are doing a whole of society's approach where we get on board with us, NGOs like the Emirates and others to be, they are fantastic. They are awesome.
Job.
They are, yeah, I must take the opportunity to thank them, and can name them, because they are always there. All our mass community testing is handled by them and managed by them. And they are fantastic. They are really awesome. Must thank them. And as well as I said, the way forward is going to be a long haul. In spite of having vaccine coming on board in March, February, or roll out in April, but it will take time before immunity, is achieved or herd immunity is achieved. So all the more that we should not let our guard down in terms of the usual SOPs, the 3 C's, the 3 W's, and whatnot. But more importantly, to me earlier, as I said, we must strengthen further over public health intervention strategies beyond just hospital-based facilities. More importantly is, of course, to leverage on data and analytics, on AI, on apps, that's worth, what Malaysia worthy of.
Okay. So, public health tools, contact tracing, automating it.
Personnel as well.
Yes.
Increase of personnel to do it.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
That's right.
Yeah.
And proper testing, rapid targeted testing.
Yeah. And isolating treatment, all those will have to come together.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Dato Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health and Chair of the Selangor Task Force on COVID-19 here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.